Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Kuf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins on Daf Kuf Yud Dalid, 16 lines from the top, at the Mishnah. Notloi muhsin es chamoro, venosnoi loi chamor acher. If tax collectors took your donkey and they gave you a replacement donkey, notlo listim es ksuso, venosnu loi ksus acher. If bandits took your garment and gave you a replacement garment, Hare Elu Shelo, they are considered yours. Mitnei Shehabayim Misyashin Mehem, because the original owner has given up hope on them. We take a look at Rashi on the Mishnah. Hare Elu Shelo, the Mistamo Nisyashu Habayim Miyad. It's most likely, it's assumed. Mistamo is a situation where you don't have positive information, but you make an assumption that the original owner has given up hope immediately upon the taking of the items from them. V'koninu heich b'yeush v'shinu rishus, and the subject of our Mishnah, the one who's spoken of in the Mishnah, the receiver, acquires it legally. It's legally meaning it's considered his legally through the owner, the original owner giving up hope, and the transfer of domain. Those are two critical factors, Yeush and Shinu Rishus, topics we have spoken about extensively in the past. I didn't mention at the outset, but the discussion concerning Muhsin tax collectors is, I'm sure you realize, a continuation of that which we have been discussing in our previous shiur. We continue in the Mishnah, Hamatzil min Hanohor o min hagayis o min halistin, someone who saves something from a river. In other words, an item is noted floating in the river, or from a gayis, an army troop, or from bandits. Im nisyashu habaylim hare elu shelo. Now, here, the Mishnah seems to be a departure from that which we saw earlier. Here, the Mishnah says, if you know that the owners have given up hope, we're not dealing here with an assumed status, but rather, what we refer to in Hebrew, the stam situation, but rather you heard the owners giving up hope, then you are entitled to keep them. This seeming discrepancy is a point that will be raised in the Gemara. Let's continue. V'chein nochil shel dvorim. A nochil shel dvorim would be a swarm of bees, someone who, let's say, is producing honey, so he has swarms of bees. If one notices a nochil shel dvorim, im nisyashu hare elu shelo, if the owners have given up hope on getting their swarm of bees in return, you can keep them. Om Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Nemenes Isho Koton Lomar, a child, or a woman or a child, are believed to say, Mikan Yotza Nichil Zeh, that a particular swarm came from a given place, and they identify the place from which the swarm came. Umahalech Besoch Ste Chaveru Lahatzil Es Nichilo. And you can go into your friend's field, and there's no charge of, let's say, of trespassing, to get your swarm, to save your swarm. V'im hizik, if in the course of doing so you cause damage, mishalei mashi hizik, you have to repair, or you have to pay back, you have to offer reparations for the damage you caused. You're not allowed, however, to, let us say, saw off the branch on which your swarm has settled with the intention of compensating the owner of the tree for your having cut off his branch. The idea behind cutting off the branch is that if you attempt to take the bee some other way while they're sitting on a branch, you might capture a couple of them, but the rest will fly away. So the Mishnah is telling us that even so, you cannot cut off the branch with the intention of compensating him for that damage. Rabbi Shmuel ben Oishu Rabbi Yochanan ben Broiko, Imer Af Kitzetz v'Noisein Es Hadomim. He says that you are allowed to do that. There's a Tanaic source that appears on the lower part of Omid Beis, where Rabbi Shmuel ben Oishu Rabbi Yochanan Broiko mentions three different conditions concerning which Beis Din says. It's a given, an understanding that, we'll say a social understanding, that you're entitled to do three different things, and one of them is this point. And he calls it a Tanai Beis Din. We continue now into the Gemara. Tana, im notal, if a person took the donkey from the tax collector, machsir lebaylim horishonim, you are to return it to the original owner. This would be at odds, or a Tanaic source arguing upon our Mishnah, and that's what Rashi says. Pligo b'risa masnisen. Now the reasoning behind this source is that kosovar. This source is of the opinion yeish kedi lo koni, that the giving up of the owner is not a means of acquisition. So that when you took the donkey from the tax collector, even though the owner may have given up hope, that does not assist in your acquiring it. And the Rashash points out that even though there is a transfer of domain, this is an opinion that says that Yeush plus the transfer of domain doesn't work for you to acquire. So that he's of the opinion that Yeush is not a means of acquisition. Umeikara b'isura saliyadayan. Initially, when you took it, when the tax collector got it, he got it, even though the owner gave up hope, he got it through prohibited means. So that you're taking it from someone that acquired it in a prohibited fashion. The idea, by the way, of a tax collector getting something in a prohibited fashion was discussed in our previous shiur. Different situations of tax collectors that function outside government authority, and hence that which they have is not rightfully theirs. In other words, they took it unlawfully. The Rashi says, Yeush kedi shenisyashu b'alim b'yad mochets, the giving up of the hope on the part of the original owner while it was in the possession of the tax collector, lo kona hamoiches b'yush levado, the tax collector doesn't acquire it with that alone. Balon is seen as domim o shinui maisa, without having paid for it, or without having established a change in the item. Now shinui maisa is where you did a physical change to the item, and in the absence of that physical change, the item is not acquired. V'chi also liad sheni. And when it gets to the possession of the party, the second party, the subject of our discussion, be'isur osliyote, came to him in prohibited circumstances. So that yeush kedi lo koni umeikoran, from the outset, be'isur osliyote, it came to him in a prohibited fashion. So as we saw in the Rashi, the tax collector never acquired it, and hence I am receiving it from the tax collector in a under unlawful circumstances. And as we pointed out before, the fact that there was a shinui rishus according to this Tanaic authority is of no relevance. It doesn't add or assist in the acquisition of the item. V'ika di'amri. Now another version. V'imbo lahachzir yachzir l'baylim rishonim. Here we have a totally different version. This version says that by letter of the law you have acquired it. However, if you are one of those people that we consider a chassid, a particularly a pious individual, and you don't want to benefit from items that belong to others, then you return it to the original owner, not to the tax collector, but to the original owner. My time, what's the explanation behind this? Yeush kedi koni. Mihu I Omar I Efshi Bemomon She'eno Shili Machzir L'Bayilim Horishonim. By letter of the law, the Yeush that took place, the owner, original owner giving up hope, and then the subsequent transfer into your domain is a means of acquisition. However, if you express the sentiment that you don't want to benefit from that which belongs to others, you would return it to the original owner. There's another topic that I don't want to get involved with right now, and that is the strength of Yeush alone. Here we saw the expression Yeush kedi koni. There is an opinion that exists that says that the mere giving up hope of the owner itself is a means of acquisition, because in our explanation we added the transfer of domain as well is necessary, but there is an opinion that Yeush alone actually acquires. And even without getting into the issue of the transfer of domain, but certainly this approach will agree that if Yeush alone works, certainly Yeush plus transfer of domain, all the more so, would be an effective means of acquisition. Let us continue in the Gemara. Harei Elu Shelo Mipnei Shabailim Misyashin Mehen. We saw in our Mishnah that one who retrieves something from a river, from an army unit in a war situation, or from bandits, if the original owner gave up hope, then you can keep it. Omar Ravashi. And we have here a new marking, the volcano shape. You can see on the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei / Mivne heading, the Nosei is the topic heading, Mivne, the structural note, we highlight Beis Lishonos, two versions, Bedovar HaNimtza Bidei Listim, an item found in the possession of Listim, bandits, Hayim Amrinon, do we say the Mistamon is Yashua Bailim Miad? We can assume, do we say that we can assume the original owner gave up hope immediately? And a distinction in the Gemara will be made between Listim Yisrael, a case of a Jewish bandit, where the court procedure would be in a Jewish court, Listim Akum, bandits that are heathens, where the court procedure would be in a heathen, idolatrous court. Now the Gemara. This is the first version. You can see the Aleph. A few lines later, there's a squiggle underline, Itmar Asef Itmar, which represents Beis, the second version. Omar Rav Ashi, Loi Shanu, that the Bailim is assumed, the original owner is assumed to give up hope immediately of getting his item back. Elo, listim oivei tichavim, when the theft took place by bandits that were idol worshippers. Avol listim Yisrael lo, when the situation would be bandits that were Jewish, then we would not say original owner gives up hope immediately. What's the reasoning? Savar, the thinking of the owner is, tomorrow I'll seize him to court. In other words, I'll take him to court and I will recover my item. So he doesn't give up hope. Maskif lo Rav Yosef. Adirabba, Rav Yosef says, well, to the contrary, Ibcha Mestabra, logic would be the opposite. Akum, the Daini Begisi, Lo Miayish. With regard to an idol, idolatrous court, you have greater chance in recovering your item because they judge Begisi. Rashi says, Begaivo Bezra. There might be, you might find other explanations to this, but they judge in such a way that they're trying to gain, we'll say, pride, and they will judge thusly with a heavy hand, with pride and strong arm methods, so that if you can demonstrate that the item is yours, you'll get it back easily, because they adjudicate with strong armed methods. Yisrael, however, with regard to a Jewish court, Kevon di Amri Meimar, Rashi says, Rashi has two pshatim, Amri Meimar, say v'tein lo, v'ein choyftin b'maklos. When they adjudicate and issue their verdicts verbally. They don't use heavy-handed methods in seeing to it that their verdict is carried out. So they don't, as Rashi says, they don't beat with sticks in order to enforce their rulings. So will the defendant accept the verdict? That's questionable. So original owner will give up hope, figuring he's not going to see his item back. Rashi has a second version, a second explanation regarding the, we'll say, the deficiency or the weakness. Deficiency is a harsh term, but the weakness in the Jewish court situation. I say weakness, that means vis-a-vis the original owner and his outlook, because the court will tell the nigzal, the owner, they'll tell him, mi yemar ki deko amras, who says that what you're saying is true. Havei edim she gonvu mimcha, bring witnesses that it was stolen from you. And until a Jewish court operates, until the Jewish court will rule in favor of the original owner, there's still a long way to go. They're insistent on having two witnesses to prove his claim. That you will not find in an idolatrous court. So from the original owner's perspective, he has a greater chance of recovering his item. Therefore, Rav Yosef says that if you want to speak about assumed yeush on the part of the owners, you would more likely assume that if it was listim Yisrael. But listim oivet kechavim, as far as the owner is concerned, he has a greater chance of recovering his item. So he won't give up hope. Well, we continue in the Gemara trying to understand the distinction that we saw between listim oivet kechavim and listim Yisrael. That which Rav Ashi said, lo shono listim oivet kechavim, regarding what was that said. Elo I itmar asefer itmar. Rather, if it was said, it was said on the continuation of the Tanaic source, and which reads, amatsu mino akum u mina listim. Im nisyashu abaylim, if one recovers something from idol worshippers or from bandits, if the owners, original owners, gave up hope, in means, then you can keep it. And we had pointed this out when we learned the Mishnah. Here you have bandits featured, and your ability to keep it is only if you know that the original owner gave up hope. And here we're not dealing with this. In contrast, stam olo. But in the stam situation, then original owner did not give up hope. The stam meaning without having heard him surrendering hope on receiving it in return, you will assume that he doesn't give up hope. So now this idea of assumption that original owner did not give up hope, lo shanu elo akum, you will assume he did not give up hope if you're dealing with the idolatrous situation, Mishum de Daini Begisi, because they judge in high-handed, strong-arm methods, and as an owner of an item, you'll get it back easily. Avolistim Yisrael, Kevon di Amri Meimar Miayesh, when it comes to a Jewish bandit that would be adjudicated in a Jewish court, your chances of recovery are lessened, are weakened, because of the Amri Meimar situation, which we described earlier, two explanations in the Rashi. Tanan Hossam, we have a Tanaic source, and I would like to point out that this Tanaic source that you see in the frame and the subsequent discussion is something we saw earlier in our Masechta, back on the Afsamach Vov, and if it's familiar to you, then all the better. I prefer, whenever possible, to limit the amount of explanation in the hopes of not boring those that are already familiar with this. But it's been a while ago. So we're dealing here with skins of animals that might have reached a level of processing where they will be able to become defiled. Items that have not reached their climax or their final stage in production will not absorb tumah. They're not considered kalim, useful items. There are situations where an item might have further stages in production, but there are those that will use them as the item is right now, even though, as I said, it might be subject to further stages of manufacture, of production. The example of that is leather and skins, so that we want to know whose decision to use skins in their, we'll call their interim state of processing, will define the skins as having reached a sufficient level of production, enabling them to absorb defilement, to become a kabel tuma. The Gemara, Tanan Hossam, Oirois shel balabayas machshava metamoson, privately owned skins, if the owner has determined that I want to use them as they are now and not process them any further, that machshava, that decision, it's a mental issue, his decision to use them as they are now enables them to absorb defilement. So that if a source of defilement comes into contact with the skins as are right now, since they're privately owned, they are mekabel tumo. Vishel Abdon ein machshava mitamoson. Abdon is a tanner. His skins, even though he may have considered them useful as they are now, but he produces skins for sale, so that the ultimate user of the skins is not the tanner himself, but those that purchase from him. So that even though the tanner might have thought that the skins as they are right now are useful for purposes that don't necessitate complete manufacture, complete development, that is irrelevant. It's the mindset of those that buy the skins from him who determine it, so that if someone buys skins and intends to process them further than into we'll call final products, developed products, more so than the skins are right now, their current state will resist defilement. Now, what about skins in the possession of thieves? Shel gazlon ein machshava mitamoson, v'shel ganov machshava mitamoson. A ganov and a gazlon are two types of thieves. A gazlon is someone who robs in the open. He doesn't do things in a covert, a secretive fashion. He robs in an open fashion. A ganov is someone who steals in a stealthful fashion. He doesn't want people to see him. He's afraid of people, if you will. So the first opinion in this source says that skins that are in the possession of a gazlan, his machshava is not a determining factor. Why? Because the original owner knows who stole them. Therefore, the original owner does not give up hope, and it's considered still the original owner's. However, the ganav, in the case of a stealthful thief, the owner doesn't know where his skins are, so he gives up hope. And therefore, the decision of the ganav to use the skins as they are right now establishes their defilement capacity. Reb Shimon Omer Chiluf HaDvarim, Reb Shimon says the opposite. Shel Gazlan Mechshava Mitamasan. The skins in the possession of a gazlan, his decision is a determining factor. When it comes to something stolen in a stealthful fashion, it does not it will not absorb tuma in its current interim stage, even though the ganav may have thought otherwise, because the original owner hasn't given up hope. We take a look at the Rashi across from here, Chiluf Dvorim. Reb Shimon said the opposite from the Tanakama. Gazlon kevon deshakli min behedyo v'lo motzi koi be'apei miayesh. The open robber who took things in an unabashed open fashion, and the original owner was not able to resist him, he gives up hope. The ganav, on the other hand, the stealthful thief situation, the original owner figures, I'm gonna seek him out, I'm gonna find him, and therefore I'm not giving up hope. And therefore, according to Reb Shimon, the ganav's mindset regarding the skins is not a determining factor. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we encounter Ula and then Rabba. Up till now, we've seen a machlokes tanoim. On the side of the Gemara, we have a noseya topic heading, machlokes tanoim, which we've already seen, Tanakama versus Reb Shimon, Mosai Amrina de Nisyashu Abaylim. When do we say that original owner gives up hope? Im bidei ganav or bidei gazlan? Whether it's in the hands of a ganav or in the hands of a gazlan. Number two, and this is what we're about to learn, machloikis amoroyim between a ula and rabo. Amoroyim, we'll see an amoraic disagreement between ula and rabo. Im kayim machloikis atanoyim. Is there still a disagreement amongst Tanoim if you actually heard the original owner express his yeush, his surrendering of hope, his giving up hope on getting the item back? Now the Gemara. Omar Ula, Machloikes Bistam. The disagreement that we saw is where we have a simply assumed situation. Namely, we didn't hear the owner express his yeush. Avol biyodua devrei hakol yeush koni. However, where we heard, yodua means it's known that the original owner gave up hope, everyone will agree that that is a means of acquisition. And we say a means of acquisition in this context, that the thief's decision, regardless of whether he's stealthful or open, he acquires, and that his decision and how to use the skins is a determining factor. Rabba Omar biyodua nami machlokes. Rabba says, even if you hear the original owner expressing his hopelessness of recovery, the machlokes that we saw remains. Rashi points out, Divrei Hakol Yeush Kedi Koni Vafilu Ganav the Reb Shimon VeGazal the Rabbanon. If you heard the owner says Ula giving up hope, then everyone will agree, even Reb Shimon will agree regarding the Ganaf, and the Rabbanan will agree regarding the Gazlan, that there is acquisition on the part of that criminal. The next Rashi, Biodua Nami Machlokes, Rabba says that even if you hear the original owner express his Yeush, there is a disagreement. The Inami Shaminon Demiayish, even if you hear him express his Yeush, Amri Rabbanon, the Rabbanon will nevertheless say, Begazlon Delo Have Yeush. In the case of an open bandit, the Yeush does not acquire on his behalf. The Kol Shaita Daite Leminkite Bedina. The owner's thinking is, at all times, whenever I have an opportunity, I'm going to take him to court. The Chain Ganav, the Rabbi Shimon, and likewise the same thinking will be with regard to a Ganav, according to Rabbi Shimon. So as far as Rabba is concerned, the Machlokis Tanoim makes no distinction between Stam versus Yodua. So if you notice, we have a little chart at the bottom of the page, and you can see we have two columns, one entitled Gazlan and one entitled Ganav. And according to Ula's version of the Tanakama, there is, according to Ula, I should say, in general, there's a distinction that he makes between Stam versus Yodua. In the case of Yodua, according to Ula, there's no distinction between Ganav and Gazlan. You can see that on the chart. Only in the case of Stam is there a difference between Ganav and Gazlan. When you look at Rabba's version, he makes no distinction between Stam and Yodua. Whether, if it's a Gazlan, it's Lo Koni, and if it's a Ganav, it's Koni. That's Rabba's version of the Tanakama. And you can see again on our chart, Ula and Rabba have their disagreement also within Rabbi Shimon. It's just that Rabba's version of Rabbi Shimon is, there's no distinction between Stam and Yodua. With regard to a Gazlan, it is Kaina. Rabba's version, according to the Tanakama, whether it's Stam or Yodua by a Gazlan, it's not Kaina. Let's continue in our Gemara. Omar le Abaye le Rabba. Lo siflug alo de ula, disnan bimasnisin kavosei. Abai says to Rabba, it's not recommended that you argue. Don't argue with Ula, because the Mishnah supports Ula's approach. Before we go further, we have a crown shape, a geometric form that's explained on the side of the Gemara or Mivneh. We will see sources, Mekur Shemisayim L'Ula, sources that would appear to support Ula's approach. Just to review, Ula made a distinction between the assumed situation of an owner versus an expressed situation of the owner. So now, where do you see in our Mishnah support for Ula's approach? And here we quote from our Mishnah, where it says, Lefi shelo nisyashu abaylim. The reason that the item was considered prohibited is because, by the way, just simply for the sake of accuracy, we say this Dan b'Masnis and Kavasei, the reference to Mishnah, we have a little arrow to the side, is a reference to the Tanaic source that was from Maseches Kalim, the Tanaic source we just read. So in that Mishnah from Maseches Kalim, we see a support to Ula's point of view, because it said in the Mishnah that in the case of for example, the very end of the Mishnah from Maseches Kalim, Rabbi Shimon pointed out that the skins in the possession of a Ganav, his decision does not render them Mekabel Tuma, because the original owner has not given up hope. So why in the possession of the Ganav do the skins not become defiled? Because Taima Delonis Yashua Bailim. The original owner has not given up hope. Avol nisyashu abaylim. However, if the original owner did give up hope, hare elu shalo, then they would be considered his, the thief's. So why is it that ein machshava mitamoson? Because the original owner did not give up hope. However, if the original owner did give up hope, they would be considered the thief's. That distinction is in accordance with Ula. According to Rabbah, we saw even if you know the original owner gave up hope, lo kani, there would be no acquisition. Just to repeat then, only Ula makes a distinction between the stam situation of the owner versus the known position of the owner. Rabbah makes no distinction. The Tanaic source that we read does make a distinction. Omar Lay, Rabbah responds, Anan lefi she'ein yeush lebailim masninon law. The way we learn that Tanaic source, that when it says lefi shalon is yashro bailim, it means because original owners never give up hope. There's meaning, their yeush, their expressed, their expression of helplessness, of surrender, is not serious, it's not deep. Because as we saw before, in the back of their minds, they're always hoping to get it back. Tanan. Well, we try again to show a Tanaic source that would seem to support Ula. Notloi mochsin chamoro. This, you can see, is a quote from the beginning of our mission. We have a little star to the side of the Gemara text. You can align it with the star above. This is an abbreviated quote, but in the Mishnah, a reference was made to a mochsin and also to a listim. A moches is a tax collector. We pointed out he collects in an unlawful fashion, but he does his thievery in an open way. It's not something stealthful. The listim, on the other hand, appears at this point to be a stealthful form of theft, a ganav. That's how we're approaching it right now. So our Mishnah speaks about a moches, and it speaks about listim, which we can interpret right now. One is a gazlan, and the other is a ganav. And it mentioned in the Mishnah that you can keep it because the original owner has given up hope. Now, the Gemara asks, Moni, the author of this Mishnah, who is the author? E Rabbonon, Kashya Gazlan. If it's the Rabbonon, we saw in the source dealing with the skin, so we're making reference to the Tanoim that we saw in the source of Oireis, of skins. If this Mishnah, our Mishnah, would be authored by the Rabbonon, Kashya Gazlan would represent a difficulty. Now, where did you see Gazlan in our Mishnah? The case of Moches. Why would that represent a difficulty? Because according to the Rabbanan, there's no Yeush in the hands of the Gazlan. And yet our Mishnah said regarding the Moches, the owner does give up hope. E Rabbi Shimon Kashya Ganav. If you would think that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Shimon, then Ganav would be a difficulty, because Reb Shimon said regarding a Ganav, the owner doesn't give up hope. In our Mishnah, where reference was made to Listim, which we're assuming is a Ganav, the owner does give up hope. So you would have a difficulty ascribing authorship of our Mishnah to Rabbi Shimon. Bishlama l'ula, if you adopt Ula's approach, the Omar, Ula said, Biodua koni, Hachanami biyodua v'divrei hakol. Where you know the owner has given up hope, you can assume then that there is acquisition, that the owner's relinquishing of hope is of significance, so then our Mishnah is not subject to a, it's not a machlokes tanoim, but it's a Mishnah that everyone would agree with. Namely, if you know, if our Mishnah, if you would accept that our Mishnah is talking about a case of, you know, the original owner gave up hope, then we don't have to make any distinction between Ganov and Gazlon, and everyone would agree that you are Kone, that you acquire. So our Mishnah represents a unanimous point of view. Elo l'rabo, the Omar biyodua nami machloikes, but according to Rabo, that says that even where you know the original owner gave up hope, you still have a Tanaic disagreement. Ha money lo rabbonon velo Rabbi Shimon. Our Mishnah, which made no distinction between Ganov and Gazlon, would not conform to the Rabbonon, nor according to Rabbi Shimon, because according to Rabbo, the Tanoim always make a distinction between Ganov and Gazlon, whether it's Stam or Yodua. So how will we work things out according to Rabbo? Can we defend Rabbo's position? The Gemara says yes. Our Mishnah is Belista Mizuyan v'Rabbi Shimon Hi. Our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Shimon, and the reference to Listim in our Mishnah, you notice we had dashed underline Listim, not Listim. We say you can keep it because the owner gave up hope. Listim Mizuyan is a form of Gazlon. And what did Rabbi Shimon say regarding Gazlon? He said that there is acquisition. He said, by Gazlon, machshove mitamoson. And in our Mishnah, we see Listim Mizuyan. I didn't explain, but Listim Mizuyan is an armed bandit. Rabbi Shimon classifies an armed bandit as a Gazlon. And our Mishnah is, according to Rabbi Shimon, that says that our Mishnah is a, there is acquisition by Gazlon. That's Rabbi Shimon's point of view. The Gemara asks, if you're going to tell me that Listim in the Mishnah is Listim Mizuyan, and it's not a stealthful thief, but it's an open bandit, well, Ihachi Hainu Gazlon. The Mishnah already mentioned Gazlon in the form of Moches. So why would you have two examples of the same thing in the Mishnah? Is that not redundancy? The Gemara answers, Tre Gavni Gazlon. There are two forms of open theft. You've got the tax collector type, where he takes things in an unarmed fashion, but in an open way, and you have the armed bandit as well. So as far as Rabba is concerned, the Mishnah is not describing two different kinds of theft, but both are the Gazlon type of theft, and Gazlon as authored by Rabbi Shimon, that says there that the machshava mitamosam, we saw that there is acquisition. Ta Shma, another Tanaic source that will be more easily understood according to Ula. We have a Tanaic source which makes no distinction between Ganav and Gazlon, and in both cases, Ganav and Gazlon, there is acquisition. It says, Haganav v'Gazlon v'Anos. Rashi describes Anos is someone who forcibly takes things and pays for it. It's a form of theft. So, Haganav v'Gazlon v'Anos, Hekdeshon, Hekdeshu, Trumosun, Trumo, Masroison, Meiser. After they steal an item and they would, let's say, attempt to sanctify it, it becomes sanctified. If they stole untithed produce and they declare it as a tithe, Trumason and Maisros, their Truma and Maiser declarations are binding. They take hold. That indicates that they have acquired it. Money. Who is the author of this? E Rabbonon Kasha Gazlon. If it were to be authored by the Rabbonon that we saw above in the case of the skins, the Gazlon example would be difficult because according to the Rabbonon, Gazlon is eino kone, doesn't represent a means of acquisition. E Rabbi Shimon Kashya Ganov. If this source were according to Rabbi Shimon, Ganov would represent a difficulty, because Rabbi Shimon's version of Ganov is no acquisition. He said, by the skins, Ein Machshava Mitamosen. His decision regarding the skins does not establish status. And yet in this source, in the case of Ganov, there is acquisition. As you saw, he was able to sanctify, etc. Bishlama Le'ula, the Omar Biyadua Kuni, as far as this Tanaic source in light of Ula's approach, that where you know the original owner expressed his surrendering of receiving the item in return, that is kona, that represents a means of acquisition on the part of the possessor. This Tanaic source is under the circumstances that original owner expressed his hopelessness, and it and according to Ula, when that happens, all Tanoim agree there is acquisition. So this source is a unanimously accepted point of view, because we'll make the assumption that it's talking about a case of Yodua. You heard the exasperation expressed by the original owner. Elo la Rabba diomar biyodua nami machlokes. But according to Rabba, that says even where you heard the original owner giving up hope, the Tanoim, namely Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon, maintain their argument, well then, ha money, lo Rabbanon, v'lo Rabbi Shimon. This source cannot be understood according to either the Rabbanon nor Rabbi Shimon, as we explained two lines ago. The Gemara answers. This is approach number one. The next line, you can see we have Iboy Esema, number two, a second approach. But in order to resolve the source along the lines of Rabba, we say that in this source, the reference to Ganov was Hachanami Balistim Mizuyan VeRebbe Shimon Hi. The Ganov referred to here is not the standard stealthful Ganov that we're used to or that we've been describing in the past, but rather it's an armed bandit in accordance with, and its author, this source is according to Rabbi Shimon, that an armed bandit is considered a gazlan. And Rabbi Shimon tells you that by a gazlan there is acquisition. So the Gemara asks, well, ihachi hainu gazlan, but gazlan is mentioned explicitly. If you're going to tell me that Ganov is Gazlan, so then you have redundancy. The Gemara answers, Tre, Gavni, Gazlan. There are two forms of open theft, one armed and one unarmed. But no reference is made to a stealthful type thief. Since you have two, and since we're saying it's authored by Rabbi Shimon, so what was Rabbi Shimon's approach to Gazlan? Machshava Metanoson, he said above by the skins, there's acquisition, and hence here too you see there's acquisition. The Iboyesema, another method of resolving this source according to Rabba, Ha Masnisa Rebbe He. This Tanaic source is authored by Rebbe, who does not make any distinction between Ganov and Gazlan, and in both cases, there is Kine. Desanya Rebbe Omer, Ganov ki Gazlan. Ganov is like Gazlan, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis, V'kaimulon ki Gazlan l'Rebbe Shimon. And Rebbe's position, when he classifies Ganov like Gazlan, his intention is to say that it's like the Gazlan version as presented by Rabbi Shimon. And with regard to Rabbi Shimon, Gazlan, there is kinyan. He's kine, as we saw, machshava mitamoson. Make no mistake, though. Rebbe says Ganov is like Gazlan. He joins them together. Rabbi Shimon himself made a distinction. But as far as when Rebbe says Ganov is like Gazlan, Gazan according to whom? So we point out that Rebbe's version is like Rebbe Shimon's version of Gazlan. Gufa, Rebbe Omer. Here we focus in on this last quote where Rebbe said, Omer ani ganov ke Gazlan. And what we just said as a conclusion, here the Gemara goes back in time, if you will, and analyzes. We cited the conclusion of what will be in the following discussion. So here we, when you see the Gemara says Gufa, it essentially is like rolling back in time to focus in on what was just mentioned in passing, now to focus in on it as on its own merits. So Rebbe said that he holds Ganav is like Gazlan, but Gazlan itself is not clear. Gazlan according to whom? According to the Rabbonon? Is it according to the Rabbi Shimon? Ibayalo, we ask, Kegazlan de Rabbonon komar velo kani? When Rebbe says that a ganav, who is understood to be a stealthful type thief, is like the Gazlan, like the open robber, does he mean to say that the ganav is like Gazlan according to the Rabbonon, and hence there would be lo kani? We saw that opinion in the source dealing with the skins. Aydilma kegazlan de Rabbi Shimon kamar vekoni. Or is Rabbi saying that Ganav is like Gazlan according to Rabbi Shimon's version, that there is acquisition? What we're going to see in the upcoming Gemara are citations of Tanaic sources that will be very familiar to us, being that we just saw them quoted in the previous discussion. We have a topic heading on the side of the Gemara in our margin where we've written the Nosei / Mivneh. The triangles that you see are explained as Makoros, sources. Shuvu Kedei Levar Shitas Rebbe, sources in an attempt to clarify Rebbe's position. Diomar Ganov Kegazlon, Haim Kavonosoi Kegazlon de Chachomim Shaloi Kaina, Oi Kegazlon de Rebbe Shimon de Kaina. What is Rebbe's intention in classifying the Ganov like a Gazlon? Yesh lo'ir the malach ha-gemora kan doime la-gemora b'soif amin aleph. The Gemara here will be reminiscent of the Gemara that we saw at the end of our previous amin aleph. So let's continue in the Gemara. Toshma, our Mishnah mentioned notlo muhsin chamoro, and went on to speak about listim as well. And there was no distinction in our Mishnah between ganov and gazlan. In both cases, there is kinyan, the moches being the example of a gazlan, listim being the example of ganov, and in both cases we saw that the final party acquired money, who is the author. By the way, note the use of the long markings on the side of the Gemara text. Who's the author of this, of our Mishnah? E Rabbonon Kashya Gazlan. If it were authored by the Rabbonon, so the case of Gazlan featured in the Mishnah under Moches would be a difficulty, because the Rabbonon had the case of Gazlan being not Kaina. In our Mishnah, it was. E Rebbe Shimon Kashya Ganov. The same type of question according to Rebbe Shimon, where our Mishnah speaks about a listim, and we're assuming to mean a Ganov. Our Mishnah says, you are Kaina, and according to Rebbe Shimon's version of Ganov, you're not Kaina. E Amres Bishlamo Rebbe. If you say our Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe and Kigazlan to Rebbe Shimon, that Rebbe holds that Ganov is like Gazlan according to Rebbe Shimon, Komar Vekoni, and there is acquisition. What was Rebbe's version of Gazlan? In Gazlan, he said the Oros Mitamoson, because his Machshava is Kovea, is establishes ownership. In the Gazlan's possession there is kinyan, and hence his machshava establishes the tumah status. Ha money, then our Mishnah Rebbe he Mishum hachikoni. Our Mishnah could be authored by Rebbe, who classified Ganav like Gazlan according to Rebbe Shimon's approach, and in our Mishnah both acquired. So things are smooth. Ela e amris kegazlan rabbanan komar velo kani. If you're going to say that Rebbe holds that Ganov is like Gazlan in accordance with the Rabbanan, where there is no acquisition, then ha money, our Mishnah is in accordance with whom? Lo Rebbe, velo Rebbe Shimon, velo Rabbanan. It's not in accordance with Rebbe, who says that if you're going to say holds like the Rabbanan's version of Gazlan, well, there was no kinyan, and yet in our Mishnah there was no distinction, and they were kinyan. It can't be according to Rabbi Shimon nor Rabbanan, because they made a distinction at the outset, and our Mishnah makes no distinction. The Gemara responds, Hocha b'mayaskinon, b'listin mezuyon v'Rabbi Shimon hi. Our Mishnah that spoke about listim, and our Mishnah mentioned that there's kina, it's an armed bandit that is a gazlan. Our Mishnah then is not speaking about two different types of thievery. Our Mishnah is speaking about a gazlan, and it's Rabbi Shimon's version of gazlan where there's kinyan, there's kina. And the Gemara asks, well, ihachi, if the listim in our Mishnah is listim mezuyan, well, then hainu gazlan, then that's, there's redundancy, because gazlan was already featured in the term of under the term of moches. The Gemara says, Trey Gavni Gazlan. Now, our Mishnah features two types of Gazlan. Our Mishnah makes no reference to Ganov. And hence, we don't see our Mishnah as reflecting the opinion of Rebbe. Our Mishnah could very well be authored by Rebbe Shimon. And the Mishnah speaks only about Gazlan. And the Mishnah that speaks about Gazlan acquiring is along the lines of Rebbe Shimon. Toshma, we're going to see again a source that we saw earlier, where there is no distinction between Ganov and Gazlan, and in both cases, Ganov and Gazlan, there is Kinyan. It says, HaGanov HaGazlan VoAnos HeGdeshon HeGdesh. There, the items they have in their possession that they stole or made off with, and if they subsequently sanctify them, it takes hold. Utrumosin trumo masroisin meiser, and their tithes are considered binding tithes. Money. Who would author this Tanaic source? E Rabbanan Kashya Gazlan. If this were authored by the Rabbanan, the Gazlan example would be difficult, because according to the Rabbanan, Gazlan is not Kaina, and according to this source, Gazlan is Kaina. E Rabbi Shimon Kashya Ganov, and likewise, if this source were authored by Rabbi Shimon says Ganav is not Kaina, and this source says Ganav is Kaina. E Amos Bishlama Ganav Kigazlan de Rabbi Shimon Kamar. If you take the approach that Rebbe who said Ganav is like Gazlan, and it's Gazlan as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, where there is Kaina, Mishum Hachi Kani. Therefore, in this source, both Gazlan and Gazlan, we see there is kinyan. Eloyam is ganav ki gazlan de rabbanon. But if you're going to say that Rebbe holds ganav is like gazlan of the rabbanon, where there's no kinyan, ha money. This source that says in both cases ganav and gazlan there is kinyan, who is going to be the author? The Gemara says, I have an author for you. The source is balista mizuyan. The reference to ganav in the source is an armed bandit, and an armed bandit is a gazlan for Rabbi Shimon he, and the source is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon that says gazlan is kaina. So in the source we have ganov, that's listed mizuyan. We have gazlan, that's an open unarmed bandit. Well, ihachi hainu gazlan, if ganov in the source that we just quoted is really a listed mizuyan who is a gazlan, then you have redundancy in the source. You have Ganav, which is a gazlan, and then gazlan again. Trey Gavni Gazlan. We answer the same as we answered before. There are two types of gazlan. Once again, this source then is not evidence or doesn't provide evidence to Rebbe's position on Ganav. This source is authored by Rebbe Shimon. Omar Le Ravashi L'rabba, Ta Shma, Demasni Rebbe, the Rebbe Shimon Bereb. Here, we're going to show you what Rebbe himself taught to his son, Rebbe Shimon. And we have a source that describes a gazlan. It's speaking about a gazlan. And it says, lo dovar shi, and this is, of course, a point that we've seen in recent dapim several times. Lo dovar sheyesh bo achrayas mamish, when speaking about a father who dies, leaving achrayas, it doesn't mean the father who was a thief, who was a gazlan, who died leaving land necessarily. Elafilu para v'chayresh bo chamoru mechamer acharav, even if what the father stole happened to be a cow that was used for plowing, a donkey used as a beast of burden. The children have to return it in order to preserve their father's dignity. Otherwise, if they're going to continue using it, people will say, hey, look at them, they're using this stolen cow. It's something, these items, the par and the chamor, are identifiable with their original owner. Why do they have to return? Taimo mitnei kvod avien. The urgency of their return, or the mandate for their returning it, is to preserve their father's dignity. Ha lav kvod avien lo. If not for that factor, they would not be obligated to return it. What do we see? We see that they would be kleina it. And you're dealing with Kenyan in the context of Gazlan. Shmamino Rebbe, Gazlan, and this is Rebbe himself who featured this source. So we see Rebbe's position on Gazlan is the Rebbe Shimon. It's Rebbe, let's read that again. Shmamino Rebbe, Gazlan, the Rebbe Shimon Komar. When Rebbe spoke about Ganav is like a Gazlan, he meant like Rebbe Shimon's version of Gazlan, where there's Kenyan. Shmamino, this is conclusive. So you can well understand why in the Gemara at the very top line, before we read the Gufa, the previous sukkah concluded that Rebbe said Ganav is like Gazlan, and the Gemara already at that point knew, we'll say, what the Gemara concludes here. The issue of chronological order is not a binding issue here. As we said before, this section of Gemara really took place earlier than the conclusion of the Gemara on the very top line. But all that the same, it's clear that Rebbe's position of Ganav Kegazlan means that Ganav also acquires, is a form of acquisition. And that you can say, if you classify Ganav like Gazlan, the Gazlan of Rebbe Shimon, where there is acquisition. V'chein nechil shel dvorim. Our Mishnah cited an additional example of things that you can keep, and mentioned if there's a swarm of bees and the original owner gave up hope, you can keep it. So the Gemara says, "My v'chein, what do I need this additional example for? Is it not obvious that you would acquire it upon the owner giving up hope?" The Gemara answers, "Hochi ko'amar." The significance of including this additional example is afilu nechil shel dvorim, even when it comes to swarms of bees. Dekinyan derabonan hu, an idea that a person is said to own bees. That idea is a rabbinic idea. Essentially, bees are hefker. They're unowned. They fly. They're free. That you have them in your possession for the purpose of raising honey, that's said to be a form of acquisition that's on a, we'll say, a rabbinic level. So our Mishnah reveals to us even the case of Nechil Shel Dvorim, the Kinyan the Rabbonan Hu, where the acquisition, the ownership of it is on a rabbinic level. Salka daita chamina, hai kevan de rabbonan bi amuhu de konile afilu stamo nami miayesh. Since the original owner's ownership of it was merely rabbinic to begin with, I would have thought that you can assume the original owner, when they flew, let's say, into your domain, that the original owner would have given up hope. I will make that assumption. Kamash Malon, our Mishnah reveals to us in this Yashua Bailamin. No, only if you heard them express their hopelessness, then you can keep it. Elo, and if not, lo, you can't keep it. Even though, and we just to repeat, even though the original owner's entire possession of it was merely rabbinic. But you can't make the assumption because of that the original owner would have given up hope. In order for you to be able to keep it, you would have to have heard the original owner express his giving up of hope. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Broika, Ne'emen es isha v'katan. We saw in the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yochanan Broika, a woman or a minor are believed to say, Mikan yotza nechil zeh. They can identify the place of the origin of the swarm of bees, and the result of that would be that the original owner can go to where the bees are now and recover his bees. The Gemara asks, Isha v'kotad b'nei edus ninhu? Are a woman and minor acceptable as witnesses? The halacha prescribes what are the requirements to serve as a witness in Jewish law. And women and minors are excluded from that. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Hocha b'may askinan. Our Mishnah is speaking about the following. Kigon shayu bailim miradfim acharehem. Before the minor or the woman spoke up, the owner of the bee swarm was already running, was pursuing them, pursuing the bees. The isha v'katan nesichin lefitumon, and the woman or minor were simply telling us a story, lefitumam. I'm going to explain that expression as meaning in innocence, meaning the information they were providing was not a result of our prodding them for information. They were simply describing what they were seeing in an innocent way. The Oymer. And they said, Mikan yotza nechil zeh. So the story, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, is a swarm of bees was located in a particular location, and an owner was running after them. Hey, I want my bees. And they were saying, the swarm of bees, they came from this and this location. So that the information they were providing was not a function of testimony or direct testimony, but rather they were telling us a story as the scenario was unfolding. Omar Ravashi, Ein Mesiach Lefitumo Kosher Elo Liedus Isha Bilvad. Ravashi lays down a principle, and that is that this reliance upon this form of testimony. Mesiach literally means speaking, lefi tumo, in a state of innocence. And this meaning not realizing that he was being sought out for testimony, but speaking on his own. That kind of information has value only with regard to Eidus Isha. What is Eidus Isha? That's a realm of halacha which involves a woman whose husband disappeared and his whereabouts are unknown, and information comes to us concerning his death. That information would enable the woman to remarry. So the acceptance of Mesiach Lefitumo is limited to that area of testimony. Amar Le Ravina Le Ravashi. V'lo? Is that so, that it's not acceptable outside that area? V'arei Nechil Shel Dvorim. Mesiach lefitumahu. The example from our Mishnah as Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel just explained things, was Mesiach Lefituma. That has nothing to do with Edus Isha, testimony concerning a woman and her marital status. The Gemara responds, Shiny Nechil Shel Dvarim. The example of Nechil Shel Dvarim is different. It doesn't constitute a question on my principle. The Kinyan de Rabbanan, who the initial acquisition, the initial possession of the Nechil Shel Dvarim is only of a rabbinic nature. This is a point, by the way, that we had mentioned a number of lines earlier, as you can see by the little arrow to the side of the Gemara text, which you can align with the arrow earlier where we pointed that out. Before we continue in this discussion, we just note at the side we have a topic heading that will say Ne'emonus shel Mesiach lefitumo, the reliability, the trustworthiness of this kind of information, information that we hear as a result of the telling of a story, or as a result of information shared without the awareness of being sought out for testimony. The house marking that you see under the Mivneh heading represent She'elois, questions, Shemashma Diyesh Ne'emonus L'Mesiach V'Tumah Afilu Midoraisa, which indicates, contrary to Rav Ashi's contention, that Mesiach V'Tumah has reliability even beyond the realm of Kinyan de Rabbonon, of matters involving rabbinic level points. So now the Gemara. Udoraisa lo. Note that we have a long question marking. And is it so that in the realm of Doraisa, Mesiach Lefitum is not relied upon? V'omer Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Interestingly, this is the same name as we saw introducing Mesiach Lefitum above. But here we have a topic that's in fact Doraisa. There was a person telling us a story in innocence, telling us the following. Zichurani, I remember when I was a child, and I was carried on my father's shoulders, and he took me out of school, vivshituni es katonti vidbiluni, and he removed my clothing and immersed me in a mikveh, in a rituarium, lechol truma le'erev, in order to eat truma, which is a tithe given to kohanim, which necessitates a state of ritual purity, and hence the immersion in the rituarium. Rabbi Chanina mesayim b'hochi, and Rabbi Chanina continues this particular story of the Odom Echad, who was telling us of what happened in his youth. The Chaverai Bedilin Mimeni, and my friends maintained a distance from me. Bedilin means they separated from me, they kept their distance from me. And they used to call me a nickname, Yochanan, the one who eats chalos. Challah is a dough tithe given to kohanim, very similar in its halachic requirements to truma that we referenced. And after all of this, v'heleu Rebbe l'kahuna alpiv, and Rebbe established this Odom Echad as being a kohen. So what's the point? The point is that information derived through Mesiach Lefitumo has ramifications on a Torah level. And the immediate point here is that he was established as someone entitled to consume Truma. Truma is a Torah-authorized tithe given to Kehanim with severe restrictions for any non-Kohen to consume. The Gemara responds, this whole story of the Truma and Rebbe establishing as a Kayin, but Truma de Rabbanan. We're talking about the rabbinic tithe of Truma. On the Torah level, Truma is tithed from, we'll say, specific, very specific items, Doggone tirosh and yitzhar, grains, oils, and wine, tithes from other fruits and vegetables is of a rabbinic nature, and that is what Rebbe and they entitled this individual to receive, but not truma d'oraisa. V'akati, but still d'oraisa lo. For Torah level conclusions, do we not rely upon Mesiach lefituma v'ha ki also Rav Dimi Omar Rav Chana Kartigna v'amrila. Another version of the name is Rabbi Acha, Rav Acha Kartigna Mishtoi. When Rav Dimi came, he told us that this Rav Acha from Kartigna Mishtoi means he spoke. He told us the following: Ma'ase bo lefnei Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. An incident came to his attention. V'amrila. Another version, Ma'ase bo lefnei Rebbe, betinoik echad she mesiach lefituma v'yomer, a story involving a child who was mesiach lefituma, which is, of course, the focus of our discussion, v'yomer, and he told us this individual, this tinoik, this child told us, ani ve'imi nishbeinu lebein ho'akum. I and my mother were taken captive by idol worshippers. Yotzasi l'shoyv mayim. I went to draw water. Daiti alimi, and I was focused on my mother. I was keeping like one eye on my mother. Lulkoid etzim. I went out to gather wood. Daiti alimi. I went to gather wood, and I kept one eye on mother, and the. Idea being is that my mother remained undefiled by the idol worshippers that had taken them captive. A woman who is defiled by intimacy with an idol worshipper would be disqualified from marrying a Kohen. This woman, who was an almona, she was a widow, and the information provided by the child indicates that she remained undefiled. No intimacy ever took place with the idol worshipper captives. V'hesia Rebbe al piv lukuna, and Rebbe, based on the information provided by the child who was mesiach lefitumo, and led Rebbe to allow her, this woman, to marry a kohen, even though from the Torah perspective, a zona is a woman who had forbidden relations with an idol worshipper. That kind of woman would be rendered unfit to the kuna. So Rebbe was relying on mesiach lefitumo based information regarding a Torah level concern. The Gemara says b'shivuya hakelo. The story involves Shivuya, a captive woman. The captive woman is only an issue of doubt. It's not an. There's no reason to assume certain intimacy. So the whole issue is a matter of doubt. And in addition to the information provided by the child, there are other reasons for being lenient, we'll say. But because you're dealing with the realm of Shvuya, a realm of doubt, combined with the Mesiach Lefituma information, Rebbe was able to rule as he did, leniently. But for standard matters concerning defining status that's of a Torah nature, we wouldn't rely on Mesiach Lefituma. Avol lo yokutz esucho. We saw regarding the owner of a swarm of bees, the Tanakhama said one is not allowed to cut the branch off upon which his swarm of bees are sitting, the branch belonging to someone else. And Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan Broiko said that the individual is entitled to cut off the branch of his neighbor's tree and pay him for that damage. Tanya, here we have a Tanaic source in which there are three takonos based in. We call them court enactments, general court enactments, that involve preservation of one's items, one's momon, one's money, one's possessions. Let us now see these three cases. Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan Baruch Oimer. Tanai, based in who? It's an accepted court enactment. That a person can enter his friend's field, and cut off a branch of his friend, upon which his own swarm of bees is sitting, in order to preserve, to save his swarm of bees, and the owner of the tree will be able to demand the cost of the branch from within the value of the swarm of bees. So if the swarm of bees was worth $100 and the branch was worth $25, so from that value of $100 represented by the swarm of bees, he can demand $25 reparations. Tonight, based in who? Another court enactment. The two people are walking along, and one has a container with wine, and the other has a container of honey. Honey being more expensive, more valuable than wine. And the honey container develops a crack, and the honey is going to be lost. So the Tanai Beis Din is that the owner of the wine spills out his wine. Now he has an empty receptacle into which he can catch the honey, saving it from a loss. The noitel demei yeno mitoich duvshanel shel chavero, and demand the value of the wine that he spilled out from within the honey, which, as we said, is more valuable. Utnai based in Hushe, Meforik es Eitzav v'toyim pishtanu shel chavero. There were two people, let us say, walking along. One had a donkey laden with wood, and the other a donkey laden with more valuable flax. Flax is the raw material from which linens are produced. The owner of the flax, his donkey died, and the flax, if nothing is done with it, will go to waste. So the Tanai Basin is that the owner of the wood with his living animal casts off the wood, tosses aside his wood, loads up his donkey with the pishtan, v'noitel demei etzav mitoch pishtano shel chavero, and from within the value of the saved pishtan, he can demand the value of the wood that he had to dispense with in order to preserve the flax. Shalmanas came hinchu Yeshua the Israel as arts. It's with these things in mind that Yeshua distributed the land of Israel upon their initial entrance to the land. As such, it's a these are publicly accepted points. This, of course, is all the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan Baruch Hu, who presented this matter. We have now a new Mishnah. Hamakir Kelov Usforov Biyad Achir. The Yotza Loishem Geneva Bo'ir. Person notices his vessels or his scrolls in the possession of someone else, and word went out that those items, the Kelov and Sforov, were stolen. Yishova Loi Loikeach Kama Nosan. The one who bought them, the one who's in possession of it now, will be expected to part with them. However, this person bought them, he paid money for it, so he swears how much he paid. It's also pointed out that this is speaking about a case before the original owner was Messiah-ish, gave up hope on getting them back. So the original owner has a claim on the items. However, the purchaser can swear how much he paid for them, vitol, and receive payment for them. In other words, the original owner, when recovering his items, will pay the amount that this purchaser had paid for them when he bought them from the thief. V'im lav, lav kol heimenu. And if not, then it's not within the power of the owner simply to recover his item, to take his items. If he wants to take them, he has to pay for them. Shani Omer, we explain how is it that these items are in the possession of this individual right now? Well, I said, let's go back one moment. Shani Omer, if the original owner doesn't cooperate, meaning if the original owner is not going to pay for them, I will then explain this whole story as follows. Mochron the Acher, that this original owner actually sold them to someone else. And this fellow who's currently in possession of them bought them from that party. In other words, no theft ever took place. So that, just to reiterate, if the original owner expects to take them from the one currently in possession of it, we allow the possessor to swear how much he paid, and that amount will be paid by the original owner, because otherwise we'll say that the whole story is a fiction, and that all that happened is that the original owner sold them to us, to another party, and the fellow currently in possession bought it from him, so that the original owner has no claim on it. We have a double underline marking, and on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Midne heading, this represents Retzef Shel She'elois U'Tshuvois. We have a series of questions that are highlighted with this marking and responses. Shem Yuad LaHazbir, which is these are designed to clarify Be'ezin Nesibois Odom Yochol. Under what circumstance can a person Tmuras Tashlum, in exchange for payment, L'kabel chafotzu b'chazor achrei shiotzoleim shem gineva, after a word went out that they were stolen, under what circumstances can we apply what it said in the Mishnah? The Gemara. V'chiyotzolo shem gineva b'ir mai have. So what? A word went out that they were stolen. Lechush Dilma, why should we not suspect Zavninu that the original owner actually sold them? For who knew Komapik Shmo? And he, the owner himself, is generating the false rumor. Omar of Yehuda, Omar Rav, Kagon Shibo b'nei Odom b'sof beso. The circumstances of the Mishnah are where people had been in this individual's house, in the owner's house. The Omad Vihifkin Balaila, and the owner got up at night and started to scream. The Omar Nignivu Kelai, my vessels have been stolen. The Gemara says, how does that convince us that an actual theft took place? Kol Shekein Ila Motza. All the more so, he found a reason to regret his sale of the items, and he's creating a false scenario. Rashi says, Ila Motzah. Pirchahi, this is a question, as we explained. Klomar Ila Motzah, Kishemochar Kalev and Ischaret. This fellow found an excuse, so to speak, for after he conducted the sale and regretted the sale. V'yoda Shemochron Lokeach Liacher, and he knows that the purchaser sold them to someone else. Omad v'hitkin v'tzog b'layla hamin dvorav k'shiarer. He created this whole scenario, getting up at night, screaming that there, a theft took place, in order to create believability. But we're one step ahead, and we assume that not so. It's all a hoax. How then do we explain our Mishnah that just because word went out that a theft took place, the owner can demand his items back if he is willing to pay for them, as we saw in the Mishnah? Rav Kahana Mesayim Bo Mishmei Derav. Rav Kahana explains that which Rav Yehuda Marav started telling us about the owner getting up at night and screaming. There's more to the story. Kegon Shehoiso Machteres Chatur B'Soch Beso. Machteres is a tunnel dug into his house. Some thieves burrowed into his house. Uvnei Adam she lanu. The word lanu from the word lina is to sleep. People that were sleeping over, uvnei Adam she lanu b'soch beiso yotzu v'an burkais shokeinim al ksefehim. And the people that were staying in this owner's house were walked out with the sacks of vessels on their shoulders. V'hakol omrim, and everyone was saying nignavu kelov shel ploni. So, given all of these details to the story, it seems that a theft actually took place. The Gemara asks, "Vidilma kelim havu svarim lo havu." The Mishnah mentioned svarim, scrolls, as well. Maybe in the sacks there were only utensils and not scrolls. Amar priya bar abam Rabbi Yochan gon de koamri na mi svarim. When they proclaimed that the theft had taken place, they were saying not just kelov but svarim also. V'lechosh duma zutri, should we not suspect maybe small ones were those that were stolen? V'kotoyin ravavi, and the owner is claiming big ones. Om Rav Yossi bar Chanina de Koamri, the part of the rumor was, part of the call was sefer ploni aploni. They delineated which scrolls were stolen. Question, Vidilma Havu Atiki, maybe that which was stolen were actually old, the Kotoyan Chadati, and he was claiming new ones. Omarav, Kagon di Amri, Halolu Kalov Shaploni, Halolu Svarov Shaploni. Part of those that were calling out were not just calling out that so and so's vessels and scrolls were stolen, but they were identifying them. These are the vessels of so and so. These are the scrolls of so and so. Me Omar Rav Hochi. Would Rav have said this as the explanation for our Mishnah of Omar Rav, Bob Machteres Venotal Kalim Vyotza Potter? A person who burrowed into someone's house and stole vessels is exempt. He basically can keep them. My taimo bedomi koninu. He bought it with his life. What do we mean by that? A person, while he's burrowing into someone's house, is putting himself at the risk of being killed. The owner, if he spots someone burglarizing his house, the owner will certainly kill him. If someone is successful in concluding the burglary without being killed by the owner, he has acquired them by virtue of the fact that he put his own life at risk in order to get these items. Let's take a look at Rashi, Bidomi Koninu, Da'aboba Machteres, one who burrows into someone's house to burglarize, Bar Misohu, he's subject to death. Kirchtiv, Im Bemachteres, Im Sa'agana, V'chule. V'kevon, the Ihave Biyode Potter, if these items would be in the possession of the thief himself, he would not have to return them. Ki Mochron Liacher, when he, the thief, sells them to someone else, Amay Mahadilu Lokech, why should the purchaser have to return them to the original owner? So the Gemara answers, Hani Mili, the din of Rav, that Baba Machteres actually acquires them, that's the Koninu B'Baba Machteres, the Mikor Moser Nafshi Lekatla. That's where the initial entrance to the house was done in this stealthful fashion, burrowing and digging into someone's house, that the initial possession of the items on the part of the thief was through mosar nafshi, through risking his life, the katla, to being killed. He risked his life, subjecting himself to potential death. Avolhani, but the story described above by Rav was a case of people that entered the house legitimately. They entered the house to sleep. Only afterwards, as we saw in the Gemara above, they were seen leaving the house with sacks of items on their back. Avalhani keva de lo mosru nafshayu lekak lelo. But these people, as we explained, that entered the house initially, legitimately, they didn't risk their lives initially. Their initial, possession of the items was not at a risk of their life. They don't acquire. And hence, Rav can say that the explanation of the Mishnah is, as we said, people that entered the house legitimately, they dug their way out later on carrying sacks of items and the public declaring, yeah, these are the vessels of so-and-so, etc., as we saw, that entitles the original owner, assuming he's willing to pay upon the swearing of the purchaser, to get his items back. Omar Rova, Lo Shonu, the teaching that we have just completed, where we need all of the above, is Ela Balabayas Osui Limko Kalov. That's with regard to an owner of items that sells his wares. Aval Balabayas Shenu Osui Limko Kalov, but a homeowner, an owner, a private individual that doesn't sell his wares. We continue at the top of Daf Kuf Tezvov. Lo Tzorech Ladure Ale Kulei Hai. We don't have such a high level requirement that people should say these are the wares of so and so. Question: V'dilmo itzrich le zuzi v'zoven. Maybe the person who ordinarily doesn't sell his wares, in fact, needed to sell his wares. He needed money. He needed cash, and therefore he did sell his wares, and now he is regretting it, and therefore even in a case of lo asui limko kelov, we should nevertheless have all of the previous mentioned requirements. Omar Ravashi, hare yotzalo shem geneva beer. We don't forget that there was word that the items were stolen, so that the fact that there was shem geneva, that word went out that the person suffered a theft, that will counter this suspicion that maybe he needed money and he simply sold them. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.